Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage podcast. Oh, I wish I could share that music with you. Oh, I'm telling you, that shit just puts me in, I don't know. It's always crazy. I use different music each time, depending on whatever mood I'm in or whatever I'm talking about. But it gets so tiring having to edit those videos because YouTube will kick us off, then we're live and we got to go back. It's a pain in the ass, man. But I share a lot of my music anyway, so it's not like that. You don't know what I'm probably listening to. I try to give you a little taste of kind of the vibe I was feeling. But I posted for a little bit on the Tribe of Change what I was going to talk about. I actually took a picture of my notes, if you will. It was these shits. These fucking crazy person notes. But anyway, you can't read them, I know. But there was kind of like this cherry on top that kind of tipped off, right? I had a few things I want to talk about already, and that's kind of what I do, right? Is I have my Adam's Rampage notes, if you will. So as I'm kind of going through my life, I jot some shit down, and when I think it gets full enough to where I'm ready to dump that out, then I'll do an Adam's Rampage, right? So I don't know why this story kind of, I don't know, filled it up, but anyway, so I'm participating, if you will, in the social construct of the buy things and do the, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, right? Which irks me already anyway. So everybody's in a fucking hurry. Again, everybody's in a hurry to do nothing, really. It's like a hurry up and cook so we can sit down and be still. Hurry up and go to the store and buy your shit so you can get back to the house and be still and cook. It's like this ultimate hurry to do nothing. So anyway, I'm leaving a store, the little, the get the stuff you're supposed to. And in this little subdivision I live in, very Pleasantville, it's kind of weird, right? Like, so, you know, I talk a lot of shit about it, but look, your boy does it, right? But anyway, I'm driving through the thing and we have these endangered cranes, these sandhill cranes, right? Big fucking birds, man, like Jurassic looking fucking things. And anyway, sometimes they want to cross the road. And if they want to cross the road, well, that's fine. So these three decided to cross the road very slow motion style. And of course, I'm going to stop. Anyway, so I stopped. The car next to me wasn't going to stop, but they stopped because I stopped anyway. So I stopped and they're slowly like Michael Jackson, almost moonwalking in slow motion across the road. And behind me is this lady. And she's just, bam, hit on the horn, just bam, 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 blowing me up, man. Now, mind you, man, I'm in a fucking road that the speed limit's 30 anyway. So I couldn't help it. Yeah, I jumped out of the car. And I looked backwards and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? What? And I noticed it's a mom and she's got a kid in the car, like a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old. And she says, run over the fucking birds. Yeah, marinate that shit. I just stood there like, whoa, no shit. This is probably the same lady that would like comment on some hunter's post about finding or hunting his own meat. And she would comment some like bullshit. And at the same time, she's the same lady that chimes in and goes, run over the fucking birds. They're fucking endangered, lady. Like, blowing my horn up like I'm in downtown New York or Chicago or something. I get it. Look, the light turned green. We all breathed in. I didn't go. Honk at me. I'm with you. But fuck, man. I'm a little old town. I mean, it's called Avalon. Like, come on. Where are we in a hurry to get to, right? It's the holidays, right? I mean, that's what we're supposed to be doing, right? Is the holidays where we're nicer to people, right? We are a little more caring about people. But she was just like, kill the fucking birds. That's it. I'm in. Run the fucking birds over. I'm in a hurry. And then I got all weird because after she said that, I was like, so run over the endangered birds so you can hurry up and get home and cook the bird that you just bought. It was all kind of weird, right? It was like a fifth dimension shit. Like, I slipped into it for a moment, driving like the birds had crossed and now I'm driving straight, like, now marinating on the behavior of people. Like, this person is a parent. She's sitting next to her child to which she's raising. And this was her response. And after she passed me, I saw these high school stickers and shit on her car. I'm like, wow. But that leads me into that second subject, which is talking about my speaking experience, if you will, at a high school that was affiliated with the stickers that were on this vehicle. But, I tell you, it was the first experience of mine in front of 1,300 children like that. And I'm saying children seriously, because I remember in high school thinking how grown I was. And then meeting these high school kids, which I know are smarter than I was in high school. I mean, come on, they have access to information at the touch of their thumbs. So, I mean, they're a more elevated teenager than I was. But it seemed like when you meet them, they were almost like from a different planet. It was weird. Connected with a few. Personally, I probably wasn't the guy to be speaking. I mean, if you wanted your event to go off like you wanted to, when I showed up, you saw maybe my videos on Facebook or something about the energy. The energy was beautiful. I mean, these youngsters were piling in some positive energy amongst each other, which was, that was a beautiful thing to experience. I mean, they were really doing that. And how it was built, though, around this movement of leadership kind of irked me from the beginning. I mean, I didn't want to talk about leadership, to be frank with you. I mean, it's a very vague gray area about what that means. And especially coming from a structured school setting, right? So I had to find my way around that topic to begin with, which was difficult. But, I don't know. I posted that I would talk about the worries. And what scared me was 3 days prior to my talk to these, I mean, I'm just going to be frank, of what college would call who they're looking at, right? This speech in front of these 1,300 kids, these were, all of, let's just say that I don't want to get deep in it. So let's just say they were excelling at the top of their class, if you will. And then I was at this school. I probably already said the name, but this other school I was at 4 or 5 days before doing a little teach-in, and I got to experience multiple classes. And, man, talk about another feeling that I felt for teachers, doing that and trying to reach the diverse group that they have in their classes at learning abilities, levels, attention, etc. And the parental difference. I mean, I know when you see the kids, see the parent. And so for me, being in those classes for just 6 periods was enough for me to be worried about what the parenting was happening at home. I worried about that. I had a couple people talk to me, a couple kids talk to me about some deep things in their life. They waited for me later. Scared the fucking shit out of me, to be honest. I mean, I'm looking and kids are talking to me and sharing things with me. And I'm just like, oh my God. In our school system, it goes unnoticed, unseen for all those years. And, speaking at that, the teach-in was, it was almost more changing than the speech was, right? Because there was a stark difference between the first school that I was talking at, doing the teach-in at, and this other school that I was at, and the students I was talking to. I'm just being honest. There was a stark difference. And I don't know where that difference comes from, but there was, being in the classrooms is also probably different than being at an event and speaking like I was. So it's probably, not the same comparison. But, the truth is it scared me about our future. I've been an outspoken person for the millennial and younger generation. I really have been, because I mean, the shit that they get, to be honest, I mean, how it's hard not to be apathetic knowing what you know about the world and what's happening. And it's funny to get it from the parents that have created the world or have allowed it, maybe not the ones that created it, but allowed it. And we pass that on to our generations, but yet they may know this because, like I said, they're smarter than we ever were. They have competence, again, at the touch of some thumbs. But, I worry that that generation may move into apathy. I mean, I think, the millennials give me that hope because they know because of their competence and understanding too, and their acceptance levels. I mean, that's something I respect, but it seems like they've moved to such an apathetic place of what's happening even, you know. But I'm squirreling to the speech, and the contrast between the two schools was very different. The teachers, I didn't see a difference. I interacted with, you know, anywhere from a teacher to, you know, an administrator, and there I didn't see any difference. You know, I saw the level of care the same, the level of concern, the effort put in, that was there, you know. But there was a stark difference, and you know, I couldn't help in the minor experience I had there in those few days was the parents, and had to go there. And I did get to experience what it was like being in traffic with those parents of two different schools. And it was different. It was very different. And I wanted to, I don't know, there were so many kids at the first school that I talked to that I just wanted to continue to talk to, right? That I wanted to help. I was going to, you know, I was like, shit, can I take you home? Can I help you? Can I do this? You know, and it just made me think how weak our system that we offer them is, you know, and how many teachers really care and then become jaded with the system. Because I mean, the work they try to put in, they go into it. I mean, face, you don't become a teacher to get rich, right? So, I mean, they go in facing that, and then they're met with so much adversity from all ends. When I did the teach-in, you know, I did a lot to kind of include the teacher and what their experience was. And, you know, some classes really understood. You know, at one point they were like so cheering for the teacher when I was trying to explain, you know, what the teacher has to go through. There's so many different beliefs and ideas in the room, and she has to, or he has to then convert that to somehow knowledge and want to teach you things. So it was a difference, man. It really was, and it scared the fucking shit out of me, the truth is, you know. And, you know, I saw the energy at the speech that I gave, and the kids, I mean, they are kids. I mean, face it, I remember being that young thinking I was so much older, and then I'm like shaking their hands, and I'm like, shit, you're the same age as my daughter, but you look like you're fucking 12. And watching just them, observing the behavior, their interaction, right? They even were from different schools, and how music brought them together a lot of times. You could see that energy of that. But the type of music fucking kind of tripped me up. I don't know if that makes me old, but it did. You know, the kids told me they wanted me to tell them what they weren't telling them. And I tried to do that. And I tried to, you know, deliver. I got a lot of beautiful emails, and like from parents even, and some kids, which was great. But I was still scared. I can't tell you that I walked out of speaking to the youth in some manner where I felt like it'll be okay. Frankly, I kind of walked out of there a little bit more worried about the future, about, you know, what my daughter is to do, about what it looks like. You know, I could almost feel the energy of apathy in a gymnasium of 1500 kids that had so much. I mean, there was so much human potential in the room that, I don't know, you could probably run a city on the energy. You know, I was trying to tell the kids the myths between performance versus value, and how that we aren't how we perform. That we live in a society and a culture almost that tells you that your value is then based on how you perform. I mean, these kids are raised in it, right? Perform well in school, and thus your value increases. Perform well on the sports field, on the athletic court, whatever. Perform well in a sense, and your value increases, and your application gets thicker, and then you're accepted to the universities, right? And I was trying to tell them that your performance doesn't define the value of you, that your human potential has limitless value in itself. And as I tried to communicate this, I could see 40-50% weren't even there with me. That's okay. But I worry because they're so entrenched on the idea that how they perform thus defines their value. And in the other school I spoke at on Wednesday, I heard responses and answers to things, such as the government did it. And then when I poked to go deeper, the student couldn't. And I heard automatic responses as if programmed memes. And it scared me. And being on two sides of those, you know, and there's places where that schooling is even worse than the first one I was at, or the second, I mean, where it's even more entrenched in outright poverty and lack of actual caring. And it scared me. You know, doing that scared me. The speech didn't fucking scare me, which was odd. You know, I'm like, you know, you got to talk to 1,300, 1,400 something kids, right? Or you got to finally connect. You got to find a way to connect with them in an hour, right? That would make some people nervous. But for me, that didn't bother me as much as when I realized a third into the speech what was happening, you know. But then again, as much shit as they take, I do look at us, myself, my generation, older generations that brought them up, that raised them to this point. You know, I watched Dana Carvey's stand up the other night. You could probably know him, Garth, whatever, extensive SNL, whatever. One, I didn't realize how racist that motherfucker was. It's kind of surprised me. It took me back. But he pointed out things about generations and differences. You know, he pointed out the differences that I'm pointing out between the millennials, etc., but still yet the ones that raised them, that's Roxy, if you will, that raised them kind of feed it. I can't take away from the energy, though, that I felt pre-speech. And almost when I walked on and kind of grabbed the mic and felt like I had the moment, you know, those first 20, 30 minutes walking into that was, I mean, it was crazy. I mean, you've probably done something to where it was so adrenaline pumped and you were so into it, whether, I can't tell you what it may have been, to where when it was over, you were kind of like, you don't even, like space and time just kind of went away. And you, I mean, that's flow state. Stephen Kotler and these people speak about this, that when you find that flow, if you will, that time and space change, right? Your brain functioning changes. And man, it felt that way. You know, I spent so much time trying to memorize. I had dumped one whole speech, right? I was almost sabotaging myself. You know, I had written this whole one speech and it was delayed 30 days. I ended up writing a whole new speech. But those moments, man, when you're, when it was over, I was kind of like, I couldn't remember if I'd said anything, if I had hit every bullet point on my outline and my memorization, right? I couldn't help sometimes, though, but laugh my ass off when, if you've read the book, I talk so much about uncomfortable is where the change is. And the whole time I thought I was walking into like one of those Tony Robbins microphones type shit where I could use my ADHD hands to, you know, help me stay on point. But no. I got blessed with the wireless microphone, but one I had to hold. So I got to walk around, which was awkward for me. And then using the hand to talk. And one time I was holding it like this, like, I wish I would have been a little bit. No. But, and so, I mean, I was quite uncomfortable. Let me tell you that. I can say that. So your boy's not just writing about the shit. The motherfucker's living it. And, you know, sometimes in those uncomfortable moments, I even talked in the speech about short-term pain, long-term pain. When you experience something, at least you know in the short term, it was something you liked or enjoyed or felt like it reached, and now you know. Or long-term pain, you never try something, and you can wonder if it would have been, could have been your whole life, right? That's long-term pain. And for me, a talk like that to the youth felt like I faced one of those short-term, long-term pains, you know? But it did scare me. I mean, I think I'm better talking to the youth in smaller groups, maybe even one-on-one or coaching or something, or maybe just not that event. It was good. I mean, people, it was, Steve said there were some standing O's, which is good. Some kids, we changed some shirts. I got some cool emails. That's all good. But in the middle of my experience, to be honest with you, there was a moment to where I kind of felt like, you know, I've trained sometimes physically so hard and even mentally so hard. When I used to play chess really tough, I would train and do certain things. But whether it's physically or mentally, I would push myself sometimes, or when I used to play football, to that moment to where you're like fucking exhausted. And you have to find that little inner thing that goes like, all right, bitch, two more. You know what I mean? Shannon Briggs would be like, all right, let's go, champ. You know, some shit like that. I love that line. It works. But it was that honest place. So I even had to go there in the middle of my speech to where I was kind of like, all right, man, come on. Pull through, you know? Short-term pain versus long-term pain, though, right? Uncomfortable is where the change. And it changed me, man. It affected me. It affected a lot of things. And some of the kids that I reached that have emailed, even their parents, man, that should change me too. I mean, but, you know, saying the tough stuff is hard, right? I was saying a lot of things that really kind of go against what they were saying. So, you know, it was odd. But anyway, all those two things kind of linked. But the other topic I'm going to talk about is corporate conformity is extortion, right? That would be like the fucking headline if I was like writing some Huffington Post blog or some shit, right? You know, corporate conformity is extortion. I mean, we know what extortion is, right? I mean, what do you think of when I say extortion? Do you think of like, you know, the mobster movies where they're coming in, hey, pay us for the protection, etc. Hey, you do what you do. You give us the money, everything's good. Maybe you do. But when I see things where you have to curb what you say on social media, when you have to shape this corporate formation outside of the 9-to-5, that begins to scare me, because now you are almost extorted. You have to fake book it for real. You can't talk about your political views. You can't say things. You become restricted. I mean, everybody knows, right? The what to post, what not to post based on your job and what you do, etc. I mean, we get it. You know, in other countries, that shit's not even, you're encouraged to follow what your passions, your dreams, your activism, what that is. You're encouraged to, not encouraged to say, hey, don't post it, stay laissez-faire, stay back, you know, don't just, you know. And so that when I talk about corporate conformity is extortion, man, I mean, they basically use the paycheck as a power threat to control an employee's social media views, your clothes, your hair, your speech. I mean, even what you put in your body, aka a drug test. You know, they test you on what you're allowed to do in your free time. How is this not fucking extortion? I can't see how outside of this is either shape up to the mission or the vision of the corporation and only project that image, or else. I mean, that's political conformity, that's social conformity. I mean, that's curbed to a corporate message. I mean, sometimes I've spoken to corporations, right? I've come in to talk to kind of how to bring them all together, right? And the first thing I start with usually is the corporate mission. It's always funny to start with, right? You grant me, say, all right, what's the corporate mission, if you will? And they'll read you some shit. And most of them sound the same. And I go, so who came up with the mission here? Like you four guys, it's usually the partners, the managers, executives, whatever. Yeah. So have you talked to your 400 employees about what their belief is? About why they come to work, you know, no. This is the vision we shape for our corporation. Okay. Well, first off, you're doing it backwards. You can't shape the mission of a corporation based around the beliefs of those that drive the machine and not those that make the machine actually work. So unless you understand the beliefs of those that work for you and why they come to work, why they need to come to work, and you can tap into some mission somehow that taps into their beliefs at the same time, that's how you uplift and unite a workforce, is when that workforce is actually coming because of a belief of a mission that you're really on, and then you actually back it up. To shape a mission, tell the worker what the mission is and then expect them to work for you, well, that sounds more like slavery. And then they tell you what you can't post, what you can't wear, how you can do your hair, how you can't say this and you can't do this, and we're going to test you for this, so beware, we could show up, so you can't even do this. So technically, they control your free time at the same time. You know, so I mean, take that further. Play chess with it on how, if then the corporation you work for that provides you with, say, health benefits, right, keeps your kids healthy, does all these things that you can't let go of, helps you pay the debt, but this corporation is somehow linked to a representative and some political party that needs this to happen in order for their business to be successful, thus you need to support that so you sustain the self, and now you're projecting that same ideals of the company mission rather than your own beliefs, and you find yourself basically going, well, I fucking feel lost and I don't. Why? It's extortion on many levels. You know, you're set up that way. I mean, to be honest with you. So, I mean, my friend Nowdy talks a lot about living outside of what you're set up to be, you know, going against those ideals. But when you look at it, I mean, are you truly free? I mean, it's okay if you get shit-faced on shots, Jägermeister, and God knows what, Friday night at happy hour, as long as you close the fucking deal and you're sober and you're back to work on Monday. But God forbid you take a puff of some fucking marijuana that may be an antidepressant for you, that may be a fucking ADHD medication, may be a fucking anti-inflammatory for you, maybe a digestion medication for you, could be everything. But if you do that, well, then we're going to test you and then we may have to fire you. And if we see on your Facebook that you will post against anything that's a mission of the corporation, well, then you're going to come to the office. It seems like we're always called to some office, right? From fucking elementary to middle school to high school to your job, you're called to the office. You've done something against the mission of whatever it is you said you'd do. I mean, you're trained this in this method, right? To follow the missions of other people. You know, you got to question that, right? I mean, and so what do most people do, right? They then question that ideal. They talk about, you know, you look, there's a million memes, right? Look, you can go to work every day and you can help somebody else's dream come true. And that's good because that company you work for was another person's vision that branched out to something that has become your paycheck. Again, that you've been extorted to maintain by non-expression of self and how you really feel or how you might want to do, dress like, listen to, or post, share, or be a part of, because you have to then limit yourself. But over time, you then adjust your beliefs to then agree with that and believe it is who you are and become concrete in that, because the cognitive dissonance of thus losing that would be, well, tumultuous to what you've built. I get it. And so what do people do, right? It's, well, I'll be an entrepreneur, right? I'll make my own company. I'll do my own vision. I'll do this, right? This is the response. Look, there was a time when I was a DJ, but like a real DJ that did like vinyl records where you actually had to mix the shit. And then one day CDJs got invented and everybody was the motherfucking DJ and I just quit. It was terrible. Then right now you kind of see that evolving, right? Everybody is becoming their own entrepreneur. They're becoming their own brand. They're living that shit, right? Everyone's a DJ now. Everyone's a life coach now. Everyone's branding now. And I think people, and even young ones, go into this with a false belief. And a false belief that can actually lead you to a lot of destruction. You know, we all, most of us are aware of a cliche statement that we talk about called the starving artist. And if you're the starving artist, right, to live that lifestyle, right, is to be the beatnik, is to be the Jack Kerouac, is to live that off the beaten path lifestyle of expression. Well, for me, the starving artist today, much like how our comedians have become our modern day philosophers, in my opinion, the starving artists have now become the starving entrepreneur. So the dreams of being able to, you know, transfer into that life of working for self, for one, don't think that when you work for self, you make your own hours and everything's good. You need to be prepared to work probably triple the hours you ever did and focused on it. And then your hobbies become difficult to focus on. You become the starving entrepreneur. And many businesses fail, right? So if they talk to the kids about the reality, right, but their pitch, the voice, the talent, they believe that buried deep inside is this ability somewhere that as long as they put minimal effort forward, they will eventually discover this God-given, if you will, ability that will blossom into purpose. And then when that purpose is discovered, then they will be fine. Instead of the idea that effort actually pushes the idea of ability. So you can have a little or middle or a maximum ability, and if you put the effort forward, well, then it increases, right? But No, instead, they go into it with a dream of I just have to, or when I discover, and minimal effort is put in. And people then also dream because they then wake up to the idea of the golden handcuff, if you will, between the American dream of social constructs, jobs, building up the retirements to 401k. They're latched into it. By then, bills are attached, right? So they break free by starting their own company of visions of freedom. Well, look. I said in my speech to the kids, the number one thing that you need, in my opinion, I can't tell you how to be a leader, that's subjective, but is self-awareness. So if you don't have the self-awareness of what you're really walking into, well, then you're walking into a fight blind. It's like jumping out of the car on somebody. You really don't know who you're getting out of the car on. So this idea of just waking up to the conformity of corporate extortion can be scary. And when you do, sometimes you're filled up with this idea of breaking free of this magical idea. And then you paint this entrepreneur picture and you forget of what really goes behind all that. How many failures? What you really need. You know, this is the idea. And, you know, so what do, right? You're faced with corporate extortion based on how you present yourself on all medias. I mean, imagine if we really start to break into transpersonalism, if we really break it into the idea where we move into this bionic transpersonal person that operates on these levels. But at the same time, you're controlled by this corporate structure on what you shape that corporate image to be. I mean, do we grow drones upon drones of workers? I mean, right? Slow down, right? How far does that go? And is it extortion that a company can tell you based on a mission we've prescribed in a vision we want to keep, then you then thus have to live this way. You can't post this, can't say this, can't back this, can't support this, gotta lean this way. And over time, you begin to believe that way too, because, well, it feeds you. You gotta be aware of all of those. You know, there's positives to all of those things. I mean, I like to talk about what they used to call me as the master of the silver lining. I mean, being awake to the idea of corporate conformity is okay. That's a level of awareness. Why you do it too. Why you do what you do. You know, I mean, ask yourself this. If you do it and your response becomes to support those I love or take care of them, because that's what was taught to you or not done for you. And if you happen to be a parent like myself that uses a statement that, well, I want my kids to be better than me, but yet sometimes use the same tactics that you were raised by and expect them to be better than you. Sometimes you got to go outside of the box of that. And so are you teaching them that corporate conformity is what you need to do? Would you tell your own child, because love the advice that Leo gave me back in the day, that you can go through a million different 1, 2, 3s of how you make a decision. But the truth is at the end of it, you can pause and say, what would I advise the person I love most? And if maybe the person you love most is your child and it's that dream of a vision of something they want to do, what would you tell them? So what are we modeling for them if we conform to the corporate extortion, that which is labeled before us, but yet we call it, well, it's what I have to do and you do what you got to do. But if doing what we got to do thus teaches and models for those that we love to be different than us, then how are we really raising them different than us, but yet have the gall to expect them to be better than us? Hell, that was a fucking rhyme. I didn't mean to do that. It's just something to question, right? It's a tough place. I don't have any answers. I'm just pointing out those things, right? I mean, like I said, you can take the choice of the starving artist. I mean, it's why I became a minimalist. I became that when I realized how much was really attached to the stuff and the things of what I had called my life, or a culmination of the things. I don't know. You know, I said to those kids at the end of the talk that, you know, if you hear snoring, that's Roxy somewhere in the studio snoring. She loves it under the green light, which is funny. There's a couple different lights in the studio and she usually lays up under the green light. Look, wouldn't you know? I wish I could go live and show you, but she is. She's straight up under the green light. Anyway, wow, Roxy, that was just rude. I had some point to connect, but maybe you already connected enough of them. But my point was at the end of them, I remembered. You like that? My point is not, or my aim is not to convince you to believe as I believe, is not to convince you to think as I think. Thus, I would be as guilty as those that I point out, or the constructs to which I like to dismantle. So the truth is, if at least I make you think and question even me, because if you're not even questioning me, well, then you're not really listening to me, because questioning me should be to start too, because starting there is at least better than questioning everything around you. You question me, you question you. So like I told the kids, my aim is at least to get you to think. If I got you at least questioning me, or if I got at least you enough when I told you that purpose can become a superpower, that it's really subjective, that to believe that you have this purpose yet destiny set for you that will never be revealed and you'll never find, thus you think you'll find it, well, can be a dangerous road to go down. But understanding that giving things meaning is something, well, that's a superpower as human beings. We not only have thumbs, but we're able to, as far as we know and understand today, is give things meaning. And so I was able to curb my idea of purpose for the youth to say, look, what they're not telling you is that purpose is continual, and it's a superpower that which you can choose to apply when you need it to. So at least if you're thinking and questioning me or yourself or the life you've chosen or what's around you, it's been fucking worth it then, fucking right? Because anything that ever made me smarter is something that first made me feel stupid. You know, the way that lady said, just run over those fucking birds, if you will, in her behavior, kind of circles back to the awareness. Made me empathetic for her that her response in such a hurry was to just move on. Maybe we're too quick to just move on and think about what's next. And I'd urge you on this day or tomorrow, don't just run through the maze because it's what you're supposed to do. Know why you're doing it. And if you're doing it, do it with a smile and enjoy it. But know why you're doing it. Don't just behave. Don't just run through the motions. Don't just buy what you gotta buy and exchange what you gotta exchange. Just maybe be in it. I love you motherfuckers. But I'm gonna be gone for a little bit. I'm going out to Vegas for a few days. I'm gonna be in New Orleans for a week, maybe till December 3rd. But Steve's got a little library. He's got this one to post later. If you watch live or if you watch it on YouTube, probably in a few days, then you'll know. But there's two or three library of podcasts that we're going to post between Thanksgiving, etc. I'm also going to go live probably. I might go live spontaneous from Vegas. Who knows? More than likely, I will have an interview lined up in New Orleans. I try to cover them all. But so you have some new stuff then. I would really urge you to listen to, well, all these fucking episodes. But man, Julia Ruckledge and Mike Van Thielen, I'm telling you, man, the stem cell stuff is like a whole nother world. I mean, if you're not, haven't talked about or even thought about the idea of stem cell or what that means, it's a good episode because it's fucking crazy. If you play chess moves with that, what that science is doing, there's amazing things on the horizon of where human beings are headed. But it's fucking crazy. I enjoyed it. I managed to cover, I think, most of these topics. I don't know. Yeah, it's pretty filled up. I'm gonna miss this cave. I tell you, when I do leave, like I miss like the cave. There's something about being in the cave and the air in here. Roxy loves it. I don't know. You know, they say dogs know. I still wish I could show you. She's so laid out under the table here. But to all my Tribe of Change people, tune in tomorrow morning too, because, well, you saw the post, man. Kevin and his boy are going to come on. I always kept typing his name. Forgive me, brother. I wish Blair Avery. I remembered. Anyway, those guys were brave, man. They set out to go stand alongside the people at Standing Rock, which is something I respect. So we're going to come live in the morning, probably around noontime from #NoDapple, fucking Standing Rock. and some fucking crazy extortion that's going on. I can't wait for that. I'm really excited to talk to those guys, and I'm proud of them for setting out on that journey to do something, man. So look forward to that podcast too. That'll be the last podcast I do again till probably I come from New Orleans again. But yeah, I don't want to turn this shit to some end ad or anything, but yeah. Hope you have a good Thanksgiving, I guess. You know, I'm not for a holiday that celebrates the genocide of a culture. But if you give thanks for anything tomorrow, at least give thanks that it's not your culture, land, and water that's currently being taken from you. And that's something to be grateful for. Yeah, I'm that guy. I don't give a fuck. You could listen to this shit and be like, oh, fuck you. It's the American way. Well, you know what? Fuck you. Because I am that guy. I don't think that's a cool celebration. I just don't, man. I mean, I'm not cool with spreading lies and the continuation of history, you know? I mean, fuck, listen to me. I promise you this. Go watch Oliver Stone's The Untold Stories of American History. Watch that shit on Netflix. Watch that shit with your kids. Just to educate them. I'm telling you, film day was always the best day in fucking history anyway. So fuck the teachers. I love you guys. But listen, play this film. If you're a teacher, you probably won't. Oh, you probably couldn't in today's world. You couldn't play that film. You'd be telling them the truth. God forbid. No, man. Anyway, I'm done ranting, I think I pretty much got most of the shit off my chest. I wanted to, and I stayed pretty PC, right? I'm proud of myself. I didn't condemn anybody or anything. But anyway, I hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. Love you.